Welcome to the Ohio Star Podcast. I'm your host, Neil W. McCabe, the national political editor for the Star News Network, a constellation of 10 state-focused news sites, including the Ohio Star. This podcast was delayed. I try to get them out on Thursdays, and I'm sorry I missed that. We will try not to do that again. In this podcast, you will hear from Star reporter Peter Dworoska about what stories he's working on. You will also hear my conversation with conservative activist Scott Pressler about his tour of Ohio, spreading the word about Republican candidate for governor Jim Renacci. Friday was the Ohio Republican Party Central Committee's first meeting since party chairman Bob Poduchek ordered sheriff deputies to clear out the public gallery at their December meeting. That meeting was a circus before he called the popo, and that vibe continued through his calling the meeting to order while everyone was in the hallway grabbing boxed lunches during a recess so that he could gavel the meeting adjourned. Friday's meeting of the party central committee was closed to the public, and instead of two deputies that they had in December, the chairman posted five Russell County sheriff deputies at the entrance of the meeting to make sure there was no trouble. I hesitate to say if the meeting was closed to the press. It was closed to me. The chairman told me through his newly hired comms director that the Ohio Star was fake news and that I was not a real journalist. Ouch. I have no idea who got in. Reporter-wise, I assume that there were some mainstream media stenographers there. I do know that at least four reporters were hanging out with me in the lobby outside the meeting. At the meeting, the Central Committee voted 36-26 to endorse Governor Mike DeWine and Secretary of State Frank LaRose, along with the other statewide incumbents as one slate. You don't need me to tell you that 36-26 for an incumbent governor by his own party's state committee is not a solid endorsement, but the endorsement does give Poduchek legal cover to use party funds and resources to bolster the DeWine campaign before the May 3rd primary. The chairman has already been using party money and resources to help DeWine without the party's endorsement, so maybe this decision makes that $1.5 million street legal. I have no idea. 19 members of the Central Committee voted to remove DeWine from the slate altogether as a group of 20 or 30 protesters chanted, "No more DeWine," outside the meeting's windows. After the meeting, I spoke to Central Committeeman Mark Bainbridge about how he thought the meeting went. I've interviewed Mark before, both for the Ohio Star and for this podcast. He is a certified public accountant, and he retired from Ernst & Young as a partner after more than 30 years there. He and four other members of the committee are suing Poduchek and the party because the chairman took them off their committees after they asked too many questions about the $3 million in party funds that are missing from the party's books. But there's a lot to get to, so let's lead off with the great Peter Dworoska. Peter, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Neil. How are you?
Phenomenal and getting better every day. And let's get after it. What's going on at The Ohio State University?
The Ohio State University, I'm not sure why they insist on that all the time. It's kind of pompous to me. It's hosting a quote-unquote sex week this week. And
perfect.
Sex week is...
Hold on. I assumed that every week was sex week at The Ohio State University.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that the degeneracy is not limited to this week only, but this week they're just more intent on putting it on display, I think. And so there's all kinds of wild events that aren't even fit really for discussion in front of a polite audience. But the one that we should definitely discuss is called Valentine's Day for Abortion Providers. They had one of those events on Monday, and they're having another one later this week. That's when abortion doctors gather with students who are putting on this sex week event, and the whole point of the event is to thank the abortion doctors for the killing of infants, which, you know, of course, is what the whole industry does. So it's pretty demonic, if you think about it, Neil. But that's what's happening at The Ohio State University this week. Interestingly, I reached out and asked them a couple questions about it.
Oh yes.
Like, hey, what do you say? to the Ohio taxpayer who might think that this is a misappropriation of their funds, or maybe who just doesn't agree with you using their money to promote abortion doctors and bank abortion doctors. And they said, well, technically, they gave us a little technicality. They said, well, this is an event that's hosted by a student group, not by the university, even though the student group is, the students that's in the group are part of the university. And they don't use any tax dollars to put these events on. And so I replied and said, well, aren't the buildings and spaces they're using paid for by the taxpayer, right? And so on and so forth. And I asked them, isn't it a little bit disingenuous, even if these kids are not using taxpayer funds, even if they're using only donor funds or only, student fees that they give to, that they raise from the club members, isn't it a little bit disingenuous to disconnect this from the taxpayer completely? I mean, the whole university wouldn't exist but for the taxpayer. And they did not reply to my follow-up question, as you might expect.
Yeah, well, I guess the people do not have a right to know.
They don't. And another thing that I found, particularly with Ohio State University, I think it's important to note this. Every single time I've gone, and I don't want to sound like I'm whining here, but people should know this. Every time I go and I ask for a comment from their media people there, I get very rude responses, not as professional as you would expect from trained media people. And of course, the responses are all PR, HR brains nonsense, all designed to avoid the premise of the question every time. But these are very rude people, and the sense that you get from them is that well, I don't have to answer to you. Why are you bugging me with these questions? Right, because they're not used to having to answer questions from people who are challenging their authority. I'm sure that most of the media requests they get are from far left media outlets who totally agree with everything that the university does to push the left-wing ideology on students. So when I reach out to them and ask them questions, they're genuinely surprised that somebody would challenge them. It's almost as if they're trying to say to me, who do you think you are asking me these difficult questions? This happens every time I reach out for comments from these people. And I think it's unprofessional. I think they owe half of the Ohioans, who don't believe in brainwashing kids with leftist ideologies, serious answers to serious questions, but they don't seem to agree.
Well, to his credit, Governor R. Michael DeWine basically signs every pro-life bill that's put in front of him. But, like all sort of Republican pro-life efforts, right? There's still abortion.
Yes.
And they're still promoting it. And, it's been more than 40 years and here we are. And it's, and hopefully, we'll see some progress, maybe something from the Supreme Court. You would think that DeWine or somebody would be up front watching this thing. Has anybody else made noise about Sex Week and Thank an Abortion Doctor Day?
Not as far as I know. I mean, there have been a couple of news articles on it from national news outlets, but no elected officials are standing up to the university and saying, hey, this is ridiculous. I presume that's because, a lot of their donors are graduates or alumni, or maybe they're graduates or alumni at the school, right? There seems to be this undying loyalty to people's alma maters that really stop them from standing up in these terrible situations. And honestly, I think one of the best things that alumni of any university today can do is stop giving money to your alma mater, because they hate you, frankly. They are teaching your kids and your grandkids that you are backwards and stupid and uneducated, and that your kids and grandkids must absolutely separate themselves from what they were taught, what you taught them, and how you raised them, in order to become enlightened and to be, you know, a good citizen and so forth. So, I suspect that there's a lot of this sort of push and pull with, you know, I'm a lawmaker, but also I'm an Ohio State alumnus, so I don't really want to go head-to-head with my school. But
let's get to the truckers.
This entire situation is very interesting. I think, not only is it the most effective form of protest against COVID-19 restrictions in the entire world, I mean, they've had marches all over Europe and so forth, but none of the impact that this has had. But frankly, I think it's the most consequential protest that we've seen in the 21st century, in all of politics. I mean, these folks are making a real change. They are actually taking the power out of the hands of the government, transferring it over to themselves. And that's not something you see very often. This could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for people to demand real change and a way to actually obtain that real change that they're looking for. And you can see offshoots of these movements or of this movement all across the United States. Truckers are essentially following the same guidelines, I guess, you know, same model that the truckers in Canada are following. And we'll see what happens. But I think it's a massive story. I think it's the biggest story in years.
And of course, Trudeau used this Emergency Powers Act, declared a national emergency, which many people say was completely out of order. What wasn't anywhere like that? That sort of a break glass law that you like when the Martians land, and right. It's not supposed to be for civil unrest. And frankly, those truckers are not very violent or destructive compared to, say, last summer in Canada, when you basically had some copy and paste stuff going on in Canada, you know, where they were tearing down statues and burning down buildings and whatnot. And certainly when a bunch of churches were burned, say 50 churches were burned a year or two ago in Canada by, you know, they seemed to be, I don't want to say it was coordinated. I don't know if it was coordinated, but it seemed to be this sort of thing that a lot of churches were burning at the same time. Trudeau's answer was, yeah, well, you know, I kind of get why they might want to burn a church, which is not helpful if that was your parish, right? Where you were baptized or where your husband was buried from, you know, not really helpful. And so you have the police chief in Ottawa resigning, and you have the people who are just really beating the drums are the reporters. The left-wing and government reporters in Canada are just out of their minds because they want Tiananmen Square tanks. Like, they want a crackdown. They want billy clubs. Like, they're craving cracked heads. And it's amusing to the extent that it's tragic on Twitter to sort of follow that. Have you been tracking some of these people on Twitter and whatnot who are demanding a crackdown?
Yes, I have. They're hysteric. You know, the government could end this tomorrow by simply saying, "Okay, we will not impose vaccine mandates on you, and we will lift our COVID restrictions, and the pandemic is over." But the government doesn't want to do that, and not because of any science or because of, you know, any actual data that says that COVID-19 is some kind of serious threat, that everybody needs to be vaccinated 100%, you know, kids included, and you have to wear these masks, otherwise you can catch it and die, right? There's no science that says that a majority of people, frankly, are at risk of dying from the virus. It's mostly just folks who are 70 and older. If you look at the data, this is all about power. And the crackdowns on the truckers are all about partisan politics. And if they weren't about partisan politics, then you're exactly right. You would have seen crackdowns when the copy-paste Antifa people were, you know, burning down buildings and statues and when the churches were lit on fire. But you didn't see that because the state in Canada and frankly in the United States agrees with the people who burn down churches and with the people who tear down statues. They don't agree with truckers who simply really would like to be left alone and who probably don't want to have to go to Ottawa and sit there all day, and not be able to work. But they have to. They feel like they have to because, they're not going to be free otherwise. They feel like their backs are against the wall. And so all of this simply has to do with politics. And of course, the reporters want, a death match. They want a fight to the death because that would make for good news. And they're all tabloid.
But they also, it's not just that they want a good headline. They actually want this affront to their power and their privilege crushed. They don't get it. They don't understand why these people are allowed to protest. Like, when is the police, when are the police going to crack heads? It's really unnerving when you see just how direct they are about, they really want a crackdown.
They're toadies for the state, right? They're not seeking truth. They're not interested in looking at the truckers' perspective. They're interested in protecting the interests of the state because they agree with the state and the state agrees with them.
And the last observation I'll make on Ontario politics is Doug Ford, the premier of Ontario, is a member of the Conservative Party. He's the brother of the late lamented Rob Ford, who had a tremendous run. I believe he was the mayor of Toronto, and he was on the international stage as the mayor of Toronto. Well, his dear brother, Doug, is the premier. He's the leader of the Conservative Party in Ontario. And, from time to time, he's been an effective opponent of Justin Trudeau. And he really had the moment where he could have taken this situation by the reins and he could have really stepped up for the truckers. There was a coup inside the Conservative Party where they ousted their party leader who campaigned as a conservative and then was sort of running the Conservative Party into the middle and basically trying to present a sort of moderate face for the party, which is, a familiar story if you're familiar with the Republican Party. And so the conservatives actually ousted the leader of the Conservative Party because he wasn't conservative. And so they now have an acting leader. They haven't had a formal leadership fight yet for a permanent leader. But into this void was, the opportunity for Doug Ford. And instead, the premier of Ontario, Doug Ford, has basically taken the coward's choice, and he's now, backing Trudeau and coming out against the truckers. And it's kind of unfortunate because, I've watched the guy. He seems like a very confident leader and confident and competent. And I kind of, in the back of my head, I was always wondering when he was going to make his move for national leadership. And this was his chance. And he took the coward's choice and flinched.
Well, I don't think that's gone unnoticed. This is my last observation, too. I saw on Twitter a photo of some porta-johns from the protest, and taped on them were signs that said Doug Ford's office and Justin Trudeau's office. So I don't think that's gone unnoticed by the protesters.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Peter. This is great stuff, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Oh, hey, wait, before you go. Can people find you on Twitter, Peter?
Not anymore. I've decided to. I've quit the social media. It's a massive waste of time.
What?
I'm finished with it. It's there's nothing on Twitter really that's worthwhile except to follow it for a little bit of news. So, arguing with random people, not productive.
I
got rid of it. I would encourage everybody else to do the same. My quality of life is already drastic.
I'll be wasting an hour or two on Twitter, and then I'll start getting text messages and phone calls from people, and I can't pretend that I'm busy because they know that I've been just doing nothing for the last hour.
Well, if you really want to find me, you're going to have to go to the Star News Network. and great for my reporting. So.
Well done, sir. Well played. And until and of course, the Ohio Star podcast. Thank you, Peter. See you next week.
Thank you.
Scott Pressler is a remarkable man. He grew up in a Navy family, but did not find his calling until he decided to help New York City developer Donald J. Trump become president of the United States in the 2016 political cycle. After Trump was in the White House, the left called for the resistance, which Scott flipped for his own hashtag, persistence. I spoke to Scott as he was driving, so the audio is a little shaky, but everything about him is solid, and here's that conversation.
Yes, well, I'm not on a bus tour, but I am in a rental vehicle traveling the state of Ohio, and I'm driving myself. You know, I'm not living a fancy life with a chauffeur. I take care of my own business. But I started in Medina, Ohio, doing a Super Bowl anti-woke party with Jim Renacci running for governor. And then we went to Springfield, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. Right now, I'm in the car driving safely on the way to Chardon, Ohio. Then I go back to Cincinnati, and I end the trip in Marietta, which is, you know, on the border with West Virginia. So we literally are crisscrossing the entire state of Ohio. And my message to the voters is, look, if you are unhappy with our current governor who limited our ability to travel, who told us that we should limit the amount of people that we have at Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners, who has been forcing our children to wear masks in schools, who has not been providing for parental choice in education, who hasn't been defunding sanctuary cities as the reckless and feckless Joe Biden administration has been flying illegal immigrants across the country, including into the state of Ohio, on your dime, then I'm asking for your vote. I'm asking for you to vote for a true conservative, and that will be Jim Renacci, your next governor of the state of Ohio. That's why I'm here.
And you met with Jim and you watched the Super Bowl with him. What is it about Jim that gives you the confidence that he's the man?
Well, this race, let me be clear, this race is going to be the current Democrat governor versus Jim Renacci. The voters of Ohio have a choice. The top two contenders are either DeWine or Renacci. And Renacci, I am confident that he is our strongest chance to defeating DeWine and having a true Republican governor be able to lead the state of Ohio. And, you know, I've listened to his speeches, and I believe in his message. And, you know, I was really drawn to his story that prior to his running for governor, you know, he was a congressman. And the reason why he ran for Congress is because he was a businessman and a car dealership, and his business was shut down. And so he didn't complain about it. He didn't whine about it. He ran for Congress, defeating the incumbent, and wanted to make change in Washington, D.C. to better the lives of people of Ohio, like himself, who was affected by these anti-business policies. And so I admire men and women that they don't just talk about something, but they do something about it. And that's what I see in Jim Renacci. And more importantly, you know, the big news is in San Francisco, California, one of the bluest cities of the bluest states in the entire country. They just recalled three school board members. And in addition to election integrity, there is no other issue the voters of Ohio feel more strongly about than parental choice and education. And I'm going to say this very loudly and clearly. But having children, forcing children to wear masks for 8 hours a day in schools is child abuse. And if you choose to elect Jim Renacci as the next governor of Ohio, he will end mask mask mandates in our schools. He will provide for parental choice and education, that you, the parent, not government, get to decide how to educate your child.
You know, maybe you found the same thing, Scott, but, you know, as I've been covering sort of the school protest and the school issue as a reporter, there's a lot of non-political people or people who, frankly, if you asked them a year ago, they would self-identify as just standard, you know, standard issue liberal Democrats that just sort of go along with the flow. You know, what is it that, you know, I've talked to you about, you know, how the parents are motivated. And what is your experience talking to those parents who are not politically motivated, not really involved, but what they when they see what's going on in the schools, both with education and with the COVID, it's making them absolutely motivated and triggered to get involved.
Oh, we're seeing more involvement now, especially for parents who hit the 2020 election. And although I was once really focused on voter registration, I still am. I'm also now teaching people how to run for office. And in the year of 2021, I traveled to 28 states, and I did visit Ohio. And I want to give a shout out to Tina Ludwig, who ran for office, won her election, and because she won her election on the Barberton, Ohio Board of Education, that school board has flipped from Democrat to Republican because this woman who was never involved in politics, she decided she wasn't going to complain or whine, but she was going to do something about it to give students and parents choice. And I want to give a shout out to Josh Day, a father in Zena, Ohio, who won his election, was the top vote getter, despite there being several incumbents, and he now is the president of his school board. And just this last week, because of their new conservative leadership, they ended mask mandates in schools. So we're seeing this from Ohio to Pennsylvania to Florida to California. This is a movement nationwide, and I think it's the future of the Republican Party. The future of conservatism is we are going to provide parents with choice and freedom. That whether or not you like masks, whether or not you like a policy, it is you, the parent, that get to decide. And furthermore, I want to give a shout out to my home state of the Commonwealth of Virginia. We saw a state that hasn't voted for a Republican candidate statewide since 2009. And in 2021, we flipped the governorship from blue to red, electing Governor Glenn Youngkin. And it was because of suburban moms and dads that made that victory possible.
You know, this will be my last question, Scott, but I'm really curious. You know, when you refer to Governor Mike DeWine as a Democrat, is that getting through to people? Do people understand that he may campaign as a Republican, but he is functioning as a Democrat? Does that resonate with people? Are they, because I know the media is pretty left-wing in Ohio.
I can tell you that the Ohio voter doesn't connect with Rob Portman. The Ohio voter doesn't connect with John Kasich. The Ohio voter doesn't connect with Mike DeWine. This future of the Republican Party, we don't respect the Mitt Romneys and the Jeff Flakes. Those aren't the people that we respect because they don't lead with conservative values. And that's why I would say there is a very heavy animus, peaceful and democratic. I have to say peaceful and democratic, otherwise CNN will call me an insurrectionist.
Sure.
But there's definitely an animus to Mike DeWine, and I think that we're seeing that in the polls. I think that we're seeing that in voter registration trends. The Ohio is becoming more and more of a red state, but not just Republican. We're becoming more conservative. And what does that mean? That means no mask mandates, no vaccine passports, open our schools, open our businesses, fund the police, defund the federal government. We want school choice. We want parental choice in education. We want to secure that gosh darn border. We want veterans before illegal immigrants. And we want to stop giving money to people that hate us. And if you, the listener at home, identify with those values, which are of an America First identity, I encourage you, don't just join the Republican Party, but become active in it so we can reform and shape it into our image. And I'm asking for your vote. If you identify with an America First ideology, then I'm asking for your vote for Jim Renacci for governor of the great state of Ohio. He will lead with conservative policies that are going to put you, the private citizen, not government, first.
Thank you very much for being with us, Scott.
Well, Neil, thank you for reaching out. And as soon as the article or whatever are live, let me know, and I'd be happy to share it on my platforms.
Awesome, awesome. Hey, be safe. Sometimes there's some surprise snow in Ohio, so just be careful, sir.
Thank you.
All right, be good.
Take care.
Mark Bainbridge did not start out as a rebel or reformer on the Ohio Republican Party Central Committee. In fact, then-chairwoman Jane Timken, now running for Senate, brought him in to work with her staff as she struggled to fix the party's books. The problem was that Bainbridge kept asking all the awkward questions Timken and her successor Paduchek wanted to avoid. What we do know about the party's books is that they are a mess. And anyone who knows why huge chunks of money got written off or simply disappeared is not talking. Ohio's Republican National Committeeman, Jim Dickey, put out a blast email claiming that the party had conducted an audit and the books were all dress right dress. Dickey seems to think that Bainbridge is someone else's cat's paw just stirring up trouble. But of course it goes without saying. If someone would just explain to Bainbridge where the money went, Bainbridge's inquiries would be finished. I have read the report that Dickey labeled as an audit. It is not an audit. It is an agreed-upon engagement by a Greenwood, Indiana firm called Compass Point. Nice guys. I say they are nice guys because they were nice enough to me. And they were nice enough to Paduchek not to say a harsh word about the mess that he put them in. Compass Point's managing partner, Pat Sherman, told me, quote, "Our comment is that we have no comment," unquote, after I asked him why his report was being described as an audit. Let's just stop there. Here's my conversation with Mark Bainbridge, and this was conducted shortly after Friday's meeting of the Ohio Republican Central Committee.
So what is, just generally, what were your goals going into this meeting, and how do you think it went?
Well, we didn't really have any very lofty goals because we know how the chairman runs the meetings, and the chairman is basically pretty ruthless in not letting open transparency at a meeting and having his side heard and shutting down discussion and dissent. And that's what he did today. I mean, the chairman was appointed really by Mike DeWine to this position. And we found out about him. He called me two hours after Jane Timken resigned and told me he was going to be the new chairman of the Republican Party. He had previously been a lobbyist for Mike DeWine. It was his prior job. And Mike DeWine picked him for the job, and his goal is twofold. One, to have Jane Timken get the nomination and election to the U.S. Senate. And most importantly, his job is to get Mike DeWine nominated, endorsed, and nominated for the Republican governorship and then elected in November. And that's what his sole goal in life is now. So he will, you know, do anything he needs to do, whether it's lie about financial statements or whatever it is, to get his goal achieved.
Just to deal with some specifics, your motion at the end of the meeting, he ruled it out of order, but the reason he gave was because we're running out of time.
That's right.
Is there anywhere in the bylaws, that says after a meeting goes about 2 or 3 hours, you can just throw out motions or amendments?
No, there's none, obviously. So that's just his way of controlling the meeting.
And at that point, you decided not to...
Well, we had one more motion that somebody made that he couldn't refuse after he took mine down, which was not to endorse Mike DeWine. And that lost by, I think, 36 to 26. So there were 36 people on the committee of 66 that voted for Mike DeWine to be endorsed. And, you know, the position of most of us on the committee that are in opposition to Bob Poduchik is that we don't believe the Ohio Republican Party should endorse anyone. We think the voters, the Republican voters in a primary, should decide who their candidates are for governor, U.S. Senator, House, Senate, the whole deal. And that's really what we think is fair, because once you get the endorsement of the Ohio Republican Party, millions of dollars in money and in-kind contributions come to you, and cheap mailings and all kinds of things that nobody else, the challengers, have no access to. And that's really not fair. We think the voters should make the decision on who their candidate is.
And last question is, the report that is overdue by now 18 days, you called it the State Campaign Fund. What is that fund? And how is that different? And what is the story there?
It's the biggest campaign fund that the Ohio Republican Party has. And it's used for state campaigns. So it would be money that could be given to the governor and all these people that we endorsed today that are running for statewide office. And that's what that money is for. So we don't know why he hasn't. It's 17, you know, it's the first, it's due in the 1st of February. And it covers the second half of the year of 2021. So they have 30 days to get it in, and now it's 17 days late. And to me, it's just a big question. Why is it late? They wouldn't answer the question. Somebody got up and asked the question, and he ignored them. He didn't answer the question. He just ignored it and went on with the meeting. So that's how he operates.
Yeah. And so the final vote to endorse the slate, was that a voice vote, or was that?
It ended up being a roll call vote.
Roll call.
I'm sorry. It was a secret ballot.
And was that the 36-26?
That was a 36-26. And okay. Obviously,
no, because I tweeted it out, and I just want to make sure I got it right.
That's right. And we wanted to have a secret ballot, but, you know, he rules, and he has got a parliamentarian that he pays hundreds of thousands of dollars to at Bricker and Eckler, and that parliamentarian rules in his favor, even though it's against the bylaws. So it's really kind of, it's a very corrupt system.
Thank you for joining me on the Ohio Star podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our weekly programs that drop Thursdays. And also, please remember to leave a positive review on iTunes or wherever you are hearing me now, because it helps other people find the podcast. I am Reporter McCabe on Twitter, and you can send me news tips at neilwmccabe@thestarnewsnetwork.com. Until next time, this is Neil W. McCabe reporting for the Ohio Star.